And Warm Trophy Kids presented by Bad News Media. It is time to talk some quarterbacks. I'm excited for this one. I'm going to go ahead and break down my top five for quarterbacks headed for this year's draft. I'm very excited to break that down. But before we do that, we got to talk about some dumb stuff happening in college football. And before we could even test a 12-team model, we apparently are going to now get a 14-team model. The news broke last night. Today is March 15th, Friday. Recording this in the morning, so it's not official yet, but it was reported last night that the NCAA College Football Committee is looking to move to 14 teams. And I hate this move. I absolutely hate this move. I wanted 8 teams from the beginning. I think, you know, college football playoff expansion was a good idea. The number of teams is where this, and the way it breaks down is where this sort of derails potentially for a lot of people, including myself. 8 teams seemed perfect because at that point, you're still preserving the regular season. You're preserving conference championships. You're getting the, at the time, all Power Five champs into the playoff. You're getting an at-large bid from the group of 5 and then 2 next best teams. And I thought that was the perfect model. Instead, we moved to 12, which, fine. I still think that could be a fun model. I think it presents some very interesting matchups. I do think it helps drive a little parity the way it's set up. But this 14, like, there's slowly this movement, it feels like, in college football to strip away all the things that make college football unique and fun and different from the NFL product and make it more and more like the NFL, which is a horrific idea because we know from like an actual playing of the game standpoint, the products can't really compete. You kind of need all this extra stuff to really make college football exciting and fun. And with 14 teams, like eventually we're just going to lose conference championships. The rich are only going to get richer here. For those people that are like, oh no, this is going to drive more parity. No, it's not. Because right now the breakdown is from a money revenue standpoint, proposed for these 14 teams is the SEC and Big Ten would get $22 million per school. The ACC would get $13 to $4 million per school, and the Big 12 would sit around $12 million per school, with the group of 5 receiving approximately $5 million. So the divide and gap is already there. We're continuing to drive a system that, in all honesty, is going to look more like the MLB minor league system, where your AAA ball is just going to be SEC, Big Ten. And then below that is going to be sort of ACC, Big 12, you know, maybe another group of 5 conference that wants to be in there. And then single A is just FCS level. That's what we're moving to. I don't know a single soul that likes that idea, because then you get this like AFC, NFC thing with the Big 10 and SEC. It's just disastrous. We're stripping away like the regionality of this sport. We're stripping away like true rivalries of this sport. We're stripping away conference championships, which is still a relatively new thing within college football. The predominance of like how much the regular season actually matters, which there's a balancing act there for me, because I look at the regular season and I think, okay, without the college football playoff, we really, you know, dismissed the idea that a team could get better over the course of a season, that a team could continue to progress even if they trip early in the beginning. And that's even more important as we move to this transfer portal era, where teams are going to take a little bit more time to gel. That is sort of like the NFL, where like in the NFL, we see it. Those first 3 weeks is really tough because teams are still trying to get on the same page. They're still trying to get timing down. They're still trying to get the structure of their team down. They're still trying to figure out like what their identity is going to be for the season. Offensive line play is usually really sloppy. So I didn't like the idea of like, you know, one loss and you're done. But this idea that like what Michigan, Ohio State are going to play at the end of the year, it means nothing outside of maybe the rivalry, but it doesn't even have an impact for a potential conference championship or playoff. Like the implications are just bad. The money side is really bad. Like if you wanted parity, you do what the basketball side of the house does, which is everybody gets an equal payout for the tournament appearance. Pretty simple, I think. So yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm going to go on record of this 14 team playoff. We haven't even experienced the 12 team to see if it works. 14, there's going to be some really horrific games in this playoff system. I don't think there are 14 teams that can really compete. I barely think there's 12. 8 there, I feel like there is. I think the reason we've had such bad, you know, playoff games in the past is just matchups in the way the selection process has worked. In giving some more teams an opportunity at the end of the season when, in theory, they should be playing their best football, an opportunity to go compete is a good idea generally. I do think that'll help somewhat with parity, but The payouts stink. This whole process stinks. It's a money grab at the end of the day, this continued expansion, because the other problem here is that college football doesn't have an ambassador at a leadership position right now for the health of college football that is weighing the impacts on the game itself. It is simply a money grab. Everybody at the top is simply thinking about, how do we line our pockets? How do we improve our bottom line? Because at the end of the day, it is a business. So I guess I probably shouldn't get too upset on this. I understand that it's a business, but it's just, I feel like there's a balancing act that could be happening, and it's just not happening in college football. So that's where I lie on it. But let's talk quarterbacks. Let's talk my top five quarterbacks coming into this year's NFL draft. Going to go 1 through 5. There are some fun, unique quarterbacks on this list for sure. I think the clear-cut 1 and 2, though, are Drake May and Caleb Williams. Like, those are top 10 grade guys, first-round grade guys. I think at a bare minimum, you're going to get a quarterback that helps you compete. Their ceilings are debatable, but I think their floors are set pretty well right now. Drake May, I tweeted it out early in the season that I got Drake May over Caleb Williams. I'm going to stick with it right now. Drake May is a fantastic prospect. The things he does, like, the easy comp is Justin Herbert, sprinkle in a little Josh Allen, because he's an absolute lunatic with the football at times, and like his desire to make a play similar to Josh Allen, where like Josh Allen does some insane stuff where you're like, what is going on? Because he has such this strong will to try to make a play out of nothing. And that can be a good or bad thing depending on the outcome. But he's definitely more like a Justin Herbert comp in the fact that like all of the skill sets are there, but the stat line merchants are not going to like him, because he wasn't in this, you know, high powered offensive system surrounded by insane offensive talent like some of these other quarterbacks were. Like, if you take Drake May and put him on an LSU or a Washington or even a USC for that matter, his stat lines are going to increase exponentially. But you still see all of the impressive traits and skill sets he has. There's a part of me too that, unfortunately, like, people are not going to like this comparison because it's really a mixed bag, but like, I see a little bit of Jay Cutler in this guy. And I think that's probably the floor for him. Like, that's his set floor. And if that's your set floor, that's not a bad set floor. Jay Cutler is the best quarterback in Bears franchise history. Now, in the hierarchy of quarterbacks, you know, not that high, bit of a mixed bag, but there is a little bit of that in his game I see from the Jay Cutler side. But from a skill set side, and I think this is where the biggest difference comes from Caleb Williams and Drake May, is we saw Drake May playing more within structure, being more on time. Even when the play breaks down, like, he's sneaky athletic, so people don't like the Josh Allen comp because the athleticism is much different. Like, Josh Allen's a better athlete, but Drake May is still a very good athlete. He's very mobile, big guy, big arm. He's fantastic in his maneuverability within the pocket, I think, which is a little different than what Caleb Williams has showed us. Caleb Williams showed us a lot more of like bailing out the backside, playing some backyard football, where Drake May certainly has that in his tool bag, but his maneuvering within the pocket is just, it's silky smooth. He's got a really good arm. He can be a little overly aggressive, I think, which in the end of the day is not like the worst thing. It can certainly be bad if you're like Jameis Winston overly aggressive, but it's a balancing act. Like, you want a quarterback that isn't afraid to pull the trigger on a throw, to try to throw with anticipation and timing, as opposed to a guy who's just scared and holding onto the ball longer and checking down all the time and going 3 and out. Like, it's a balancing act. And I do think Drake May has that balance. He just wasn't surrounded by the best weapons. You know, Tez Walker came in later in the season, and Tez Walker's a fantastic college football wide receiver. And if you listen to the college football show we do, you've heard me talk about him. But as far as like an NFL prospect, it's a little murky. We saw that at the Senior Bowl, where like, can't run a 5-yard curl route. So yeah, I really like Drake May. I think that he is a fantastic prospect. You can't go wrong, though, I don't think, with Caleb Williams or Drake May. And that's where Caleb Williams comes into this picture, because Caleb Williams is this unbelievable athlete. His ability, the way he can flick his wrist and just throw an absolute dart from virtually any position, like his arm position, body position, is incredible. The concern, though, is certainly going to be that thing about, you know, it turned, and we talked about this in the college show a lot, it's just backyard football at USC and with Lincoln Riley. And it's hard to gauge how much of that is Caleb Williams versus how much of that is just Lincoln Riley, because there is a lot of evidence that suggests that, like, that organization as a whole, operation as a whole, is undisciplined and somewhat unserious. Like, it feels like a lot of their practice time is designated to kind of practicing, hey, things outside of structure, outside of timing, sort of chaos in creating that. And it's been super, you know, super effective. You know, you look at the numbers that Lincoln Riley's offenses have put up, they're pretty crazy. But it rears its ugly head on a lot of, like, when you watch that USC team last year, when you watch Caleb Williams, so much of it was out of structure. There was, like, no real timing. The route concepts were an absolute disaster. Like, we never really saw Caleb Williams get to play a regular game. And that is somewhat concerning, because when it becomes so ingrained in you that, like, you've always got to be making a play, you've always got to be running around, you're not really playing in structure, that can be a little bit of a hard adjustment to make in the NFL. And I'm not saying he can't do it, because he's a super smart guy. Like, everybody seems to like him. But we've seen that, like, the types of plays he was making in college are certainly transferable to a degree, because you see guys like Patrick Mahomes, where this comp comes in a lot, of being able to make these insane, crazy, when everything's breaking down, turn this into a backyard football game. But you've got to be willing to play more within structure. And we saw that really kind of bite them in the butt when they played a really good defense like Notre Dame. Like, that Notre Dame game showed up for him. And that was a rough, like, by the end, he sort of started to figure it out. But that was a really rough game, because you had a defense that was tough and physical and disciplined, and didn't get really out of their assignments a whole lot. Like, that was a really phenomenal Notre Dame defense. And you saw, you know, what USC was trying to do just doesn't work anymore. And we've seen that in the NFL level. Like, Patrick Mahomes early in his career, I always think back to my Bucks versus Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And Todd Bowles brilliantly figuring out that Patrick Mahomes at that point in his development was much more comfortable bailing out and trying to create something on the fly than maneuvering within the pocket and trying to play still within the structure. So what he would do is he would create an artificial pressure to the right or left side, whichever way he was trying to kind of force him out on the back end. And then he'd have Lavonte David or Devin White or somebody sitting on that back end, because he knew Patrick Mahomes was going to feel that immense pressure coming up his right side, spin around and try to bail out the left and try to make a play. And then boom, right there's the defender. And it was brilliant. It worked fantastically. And we've seen Patrick Mahomes continue to grow that mobility within the pocket, to really work within the pocket with work and structure. And that's what we're going to need for Caleb Williams, I think, to really succeed and achieve that high ceiling that he has. But at a bare minimum, he's going to be a very good NFL prospect, as long as you surround him with something, as long as you have some good coaching to help him continue to develop. I think he's going to do his part, because the personality stuff with Caleb Williams, it's nonsense. Like, it's absolute nonsense. Where are the teammates that are saying this actually made a difference? Like, everybody speaks so highly of him, his teammates, his coaches, everybody around him. Like, yeah, some of that, like, if this was the 1990s and you were trying to lead a locker room, yeah, maybe painting your fingernails and the crying in the stands would be tough to actually follow that guy, maybe. But the mindset of the league is changing. The personalities within the league are changing. They're getting younger and younger with this new generation. And that stuff has zero relevance as to whether or not he can play the quarterback position effectively and be a good leader. Because I do think he showed a lot of good leadership skills, because once again, where are all these teammates saying he was a bad leader if that stuff actually mattered? It doesn't matter. It hasn't mattered. Everything is positive around this guy. Sure, he might rub you the wrong way. Some of this stuff, you know, will be used as excuses if the play is poor, for sure. But if you win, none of this stuff matters. If you continue to execute at a high level, none of this stuff matters. As long as you play your role in the stuff, and the failures that are happening within your organization are sort of out of your control because coaching's really terrible or player personnel is really rough, at the end of the day, it's a nothing burger. So I do like Caleb. The three spot is where this starts to get really interesting. There's a guy I wanted to put at three that I just couldn't do, and I'm going to talk about it when I get to him at four. But at three, I think it is Jaden Daniels. Do I have Jaden Daniels as a top 10 graded pick? No. Is he going to probably be a top 10 rated pick? Yeah, probably. And what I'm about to say is a little contradictory because they're sitting at 11, but the Vikings feel like the perfect spot for Jaden Daniels right now. Like that would be electric to see him with the Minnesota Vikings. I think with what that coaching staff does from an offensive standpoint, the weapons that are there, the decency of the offensive line you're going to have, like that would be a system where I think Jaden Daniels could really succeed. And I kind of like what they are doing as an organization. But there's good and bad with Jaden Daniels. There's certainly some development that still needs to happen that I think Kevin O'Connell could do a great job of helping with. Like I really like the way he operates his offense. 11's probably a little bit of a stretch, but like this is Jaden Daniels is going to if he goes to like the Patriots, I don't have a lot of faith that his career is going to go all that great because we have, and to be fair to the Patriots, we haven't seen what that organization is going to look like after Bill Belichick because of the amount of control Bill Belichick had on that organization. Like who knows, maybe this organization is going to do a really good job of surrounding its quarterback with good assets and a good roster and decent coaching. But like, I think that's what Jaden Daniels is going to need ultimately to succeed in this league. So let's talk about the good and bad with Jaden Daniels, because the bad right off the bat is this dude takes some of the most insane hits ever. Like he just gets absolutely clobbered. And this is what happens when you watch the games and not the highlight tape. This has always been his MO. Like I remember watching him in his freshman year at Arizona State and thinking like, man, this guy could really be something. Like the tool set is there, but he needs to get more consistent. And as he continued to grow, you're like, man, this guy's taking a lot of hits and they're not good hits. And we even talked about it leading up in this season and the Trophy Kids podcast leading up to this college season and in the early part about how great it was that he put on some healthy weight to hopefully help him absorb some of these hits that we just knew he was going to take over the course of the season because that's what he does. And it has helped him become incredibly efficient as a player, and it's definitely helped boost the numbers because he's so dynamic as a runner because he doesn't go down when he probably should, and he tries to shoot that gap or that angle. And a lot of the times it can work at the college level, but then he gets absolutely clobbered. And in the NFL, he's going to get sent to the shadow realm if he's taking some of these hits. And some of these hits, too, are going to be incredibly detrimental, not to only his health, but to the team, because it's going to lead to potentially fumbles and other things. He doesn't seem to care. Like he'll take these hits and just get right back up, which is somewhat reassuring. But I do have question marks about like the sustainability of that, which will be interesting to see, I think. Because, I mean, Brian Kelly had to be telling him, like, go down. And he just wasn't doing it, but maybe not. And that will certainly be a part of his NFL development. But from a passing, like he's a dynamic runner, which is awesome if you can get and utilize a part of that RPO game. It unlocks like the secret power of offenses when you can kind of mix that in. He throws a really good go ball. He attacks the outside really well, I think. We saw this giant jump this season. He hasn't really attacked the middle of the field great, but this is where like the Kevin O'Connell type of coach really, I think, helps because, you know, he does a good job of structuring his routes from an offensive scheme point. He does a good job of layering plays in to help make it easier to throw across the middle of the field. And I think that development would be very helpful for Jaden Daniels. I think the other concern when we talk about Jaden Daniels is, you know, the pressure to sack ratio is really bad. And that comes from sort of opposite to Drake May, where Drake May is like ultra aggressive. Jaden Daniels, certainly he throws with less anticipation and timing at times. And it comes from this kind of, I think, fear of turning over the football. And Brian Kelly kind of spoke a little to this where, you know, early in the season, they were just kind of like, all right, throw an interception. Like we want him to throw an interception so we can just be like, look, you did it. Now you can get rid of it. Like wash it away. Like just get rid of it. You're not going to be perfect. That's okay. We survived. Like, let's go make some plays. Let's be aggressive here. So I think maybe that potentially could be a concern, but Jaden Daniels is a very interesting prospect. He's an exciting prospect. Is he a top 10 player? I don't know if I would draft him in the top 10. Like I don't have that grade. Will he get drafted into the top 10? Yes. Could it work out? Yes. Depending on the team he goes to. Would I, you know, ideally, you know, could falling be in the best interest of his overall career and going to the right team? Absolutely. But he sits at my three. My four is a guy that I love. I love Michael Penix Jr. I think he's a fantastic prospect. The reason he is not higher is injury history and age. And that's the unfortunate nature of it. But he's an absolute gamer. Like Ben Roethlisberger type of gamer, as far as like you could be have the most outrageous injuries and he's still going to play. And he's going to be able to play at a somewhat high level, no matter the injury, because we saw that he dealt with some injuries that should greatly affect the quarterback play. And it did to a degree, but he played through them, got his team to a national championship, and it was a national championship game. It was absolutely fantastic. What I love about Michael Penix Jr. is just how kind of cerebral he is with this, how smart he is with the football. Michael Penix Jr. understands the what, why, and when of every single play. He understands the leverages. It's why he's able to be on time and accurate. He's absolutely fantastic. It reminds me a lot, the way people talk about Michael Penix Jr., though, reminds me a lot of the way we were talking about Joe Burrow leading up to this, into the draft, because they were like, well, he doesn't have the greatest arm. He's not the most athletic. He had all this talent surrounding him. Yeah, but he understood conceptually everything that was going on. He understood everybody's assignments. He understood the defense and the leverages being played with there. He had a good enough arm to make all the throws you need. He was going to be very accurate. That's Michael Penix Jr. His ability to move within the pocket is fantastic and make that first guy miss. That is Michael Penix Jr. Michael Penix, like that offensive line at Washington won the Jim Moore Award, which goes to the best offensive line in college football. They greatly benefited from the fact that Michael Penix Jr. has a phenomenal ability to maneuver within the pocket and make that first guy miss, reset his eyes, reset his feet, and deliver an on-time, accurate football. Like that skill set is absolutely transferable. And he's got a good arm. It's the left-handed theory thing where, like, if he was a right-handed quarterback, I think people would be so much higher than him. It's so funny when you, like, those videos where you flip it. I even do it myself where, like, they flip him to a right-handed quarterback, and it does look so much more composed and better. But it's the same thing on the left side. So I think that's an exciting thing for him. I really like Michael Penix Jr. Sorry, they're doing some work outside my window, apparently, for like the seventh straight day. I don't know how long it takes to put in this ramp, but just drilling away. Financial fraud by whatever company is putting this ramp in outside the door or outside my building. Sorry, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, Michael Penix Jr. Like, I really like him. I think he could be a really good NFL quarterback. Once again, right team, right fit. He is older. The injury concerns are absolutely there, but he's shown that he will gut it out and still can play at a high level. It's just the older factor with the injuries makes it hard to put him higher, but I will not be shocked in the least bit if he is wildly successful, similar to like a Joe Burrow type guy. At five, this is where debates are definitely going to be happening a lot, and I was debating between Bo Nix and JJ McCarthy. At my five, I have JJ McCarthy because in my mind, that's a day two guy. And why not take the younger guy than the older guy who played more in a finicky offense, didn't require you to do a lot that's really transferable to the NFL. Not saying Bo Nix can't be good and like there isn't a skill set there, but JJ McCarthy, there are certainly flaws and things that need to be worked out with JJ McCarthy, I think. I think he locks into wide receivers a little too soon and too early. Biggest case in point ever was that opening drive in the Rose Bowl where he throws one of the worst picks ever because he just locked in on a guy trying to make a play. I think the good with JJ McCarthy, though, is he's mobile enough and athletic enough. He is phenomenal on the run throwing the ball. He throws an accurate, on-time football. He's got a big arm. He played in a pro-style offense with Jim Harbaugh. I think that development and that understanding is important. He's clearly a good leader with what he did with this Michigan offense. I think there's a lot to potentially like the mold is there for him. It's just what can you mold him into is going to be the challenge. And that's why he's like a day two guy, a guy that if you have a quarterback, you can draft him, sit him, and help develop him. Similar to like a Jordan Love, Patrick Mahomes situation where like you already have a guy, you don't need to move off of him right away. You can let this guy sit in your organization for a little bit, start to understand concepts, understand the what, why, and when of every play. Develop his tool set, and I think he could be a really nice prospect. So I've got him at my five. Bo Nix would probably be at my six. An honorable mention, not in my top five, going to be a later round guy, but is absolutely, and I talked about it during the college football season, Sam Hartman. I mean, the dude looks like a football god. He's going to make a ton of money in this league because he's the next Chase Daniels. Like, he's not a guy who's going to be a starting elite quarterback, but he's going to be a backup that teams just gravitate to because, like, he'll find a team, the quarterback will get injured, he'll come in, he'll absolutely rip it for, like, a game or two. That'll earn him his next contract or his next team, and he'll just kind of continue to do that and be, like, the Chase Daniels of the NFL and just make a living being a backup, not having to worry about money. Like, he's got some nice attributes, but physically he's not really there. Sam Hartman is just, he's going to make a lot of teams and a lot of money just being a backup, a perennial backup, and just hanging around in the league forever, I feel like. So that's my top five as I see it. What do you guys think? Leave comments. You know, make sure you're following us at Trivia Kids Pod on both Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, the YouTube page we've got going on. We love your support. Thank you so much for following with us here. That's kind of how I see the top five breaking down for the football side of it this year. I'm going to talk more about draft stuff. I'm very excited. I've started the prep to do the early preseason breakdowns for college football. We're going to go through the conferences and teams. It's going to be a lot of fun. So be on the lookout for some of that content. And as always, peace.